Decades after the unidentified body of a 10-year-old boy was found near a North Carolina highway, a determined investigator kept a case file under his desk, positioning it so that every time he made a move, he'd hit that box with his leg, creating a constant reminder of a little boy with no name. Now, with the help of his team, including the help of a consultant who helped investigators work the Golden State Killer case, this detective has been able to solve a mystery that's haunted him for decades. This is the mystery of the boy under the billboard. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. September 25th, 1998, a hot and humid Friday in Mebane, North Carolina. With the sun bearing down, a landscaping crew worked to cut grass near a billboard on a frontage road just off the intersection of Interstates 85 and 40, major roadways that connect Raleigh, Durham, and Charlotte, North Carolina. Around noon that day, one of the workers noticed something that looked out of place under the billboard. As they approached, they discovered a human skull. They immediately called the sheriff's office, and as investigators arrived on scene, they faced the heartbreaking task of piecing together what happened to the child who had been found here, just 75 feet off the interstate. Major Tim Horn was one of the first to arrive on scene that September day as an investigator with the Orange County Sheriff's Department. He and his team noted that the child was partially clothed, but the body had been exposed to the elements and was badly decomposed. An autopsy would later reveal that the child was a little boy who had been killed by strangulation. But who was this boy? Detective Horn and his team dedicated a lot of time and sleepless nights trying to identify this child. They learned the clothing he was wearing when he was found, including his sneakers, had been sold in Walmart stores, but they couldn't narrow down which region of the country the clothing would have been sold in. Investigators made appeals to the public for any information they may have about a missing boy. But month after month, no leads, no new information. As more and more time passed, Detective Horn vowed he would find answers. But he also faced the reality that he needed help. He needed technology to help him solve this case. And in 1998, he knew he was going to have to wait for technology to catch up. The child would become known as the boy under the billboard. His skeletal remains were stored on a shelf at the Orange County, North Carolina Medical Examiner's Office. Would remain there for two decades. A cross was placed at the spot where the boy's remains had been found, with only the words, "Boy, 1998," standing as a memorial to this little child whose life had come to a tragic end. Detective Horn made a promise to himself and to this child to find answers, to return his name. Until then, he would refer to this boy as his own son. Because until this little one was able to return home to his loved ones, Detective Horn took him into his heart as his own and bore the weight of this case for decades, fighting for answers until 2018, when a break in the case would lead the detective to solve not only the mystery of the boy under the billboard, but a second murder over 200 miles away. Detective Horn would spend two decades of his life working this case with a growing team of investigators and experts, from the North Carolina Medical Examiner's Office to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They tested and retested evidence, would track leads, come to a dead end, start back at the beginning, and do it all over again. No matter how heavy his workload on many cases he was working, Detective Horn never stopped working this case of the boy under the billboard. making sure every piece of potential evidence was analyzed for any lead. The team tested everything they could, including insects that had been recovered from the boy's bones and teeth, and pollen found on his clothing. As technology and testing progressed, North Carolina Medical Examiner Specialist Clyde Gibbs Jr. was able to determine that the boy spent the last 5 years of his life in a region that encompassed Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, North and South Carolina. A large geographical region, but a clue that gave Detective Horn hope. Horn also called on the Smithsonian Institute's senior scientist and curator of biological anthropology, Douglas Schubelaker, to create a drawing of the child that would be distributed through media outlets. For years, it was the only image the team had to work with in this case. A little boy, about 10 years old, with dark hair and eyes. But in 2011, Horn called on Frank Bender for help. Bender was a forensic sculptor who had been enlisted to work on cases with the FBI, Interpol, Scotland Yard, even the TV show America's Most Wanted. Bender referred to himself as a recomposer of the decomposed. He used DNA and the child's remains to create a three-dimensional bust of the child's face. With a new image to distribute of the boy under the billboard, the story gained national and even international attention. But once again, Detective Horn found himself back at square one. No ID and no answers. Then came genetic genealogy consultant Dr. Barbara Ray Venter. The name may be familiar to you because she worked as part of the team that would help solve the Golden State Killer case in 2018. Detective Horn connected with Ray Venter, who analyzed the DNA of the boy under the billboard and learned the boy was a first-generation child of Asian and Caucasian parents. This was important information because until now, the team had been working off of the theory that the boy may have been Hispanic. Ray Venter then compared the DNA of the boy with the online DNA ancestry services. Using genetic genealogy, she was able to lead investigators to the biggest lead in this case in years. There was a probable first cousin of the child's parent living in Hawaii. Detective Horn tracked down the contact information for this potential family member, and on December 26, 2018, he was able to hear what he had been waiting to hear for 20 years, the name of the boy under the billboard. Bobby Witt. Robert Bobby Adam Witt was born January 7th, 1988, in Michigan. The family sent pictures to Detective Horn. He finally saw the face of the boy he could now call Bobby. And he finally knew why no one reported Bobby missing, why there had been no leads. Bobby's family was shocked to learn that he had been murdered because the boy's family had believed Bobby's mother, Myung Cho, had taken him back to her native South Korea over 20 years ago. Now, Detective Horn had to find the answer to the question Bobby's family were asking. Where was Bobby's mom? Was she dead too? If not, had she been involved in what happened to Bobby? Detective Horn went to work trying to find Bobby's mother in local databases in North Carolina. He searched for any report of an unidentified woman matching her description. As he widened his search, Detective Horn found a report of an unidentified Asian woman's body that had been discovered on May 13, 1998. That's 4 months before Bobby had been discovered under that billboard in Mebane, North Carolina. The naked body of this unidentified woman had been found behind a pile of debris on a road that ran parallel to Interstate 85. Her body had been discovered in Spartanburg County, South Carolina, over 200 miles from the location where Bobby had been found, just off Interstate 85. When she was discovered, investigators learned that the woman had been bound and strangled before she was dumped behind that pile of debris. DNA had been extracted from her remains before they were stored at the medical examiner's office. With the help of authorities in South Carolina, DNA testing was conducted and revealed a familial match to Bobby Witt. South Korean authorities and Interpol helped investigators as well, providing fingerprints and records that would confirm the woman was 44-year-old Myung Wei Cho Wit, born January 27, 1954, in South Korea. Detective Horn and his team had found Bobby's mother and helped South Carolina investigators give her a name. Bobby's family described Myung as a loving mother and a hard worker. They said she would work two jobs at a time to help provide for the family, and she always found time for her son. Family members, including Bobby's cousin, Natalie Mosteller, have spoken with the media over the past few months as they've processed the shock of learning their family members died 20 years ago. Bobby's cousin, Natalie, shared that her uncle, John Russell Witt, was Bobby's dad. Witt had been stationed in the military in South Korea when he met and married Myung. The two returned to America, had one child, Bobby, and lived in Michigan for a time, and then Ohio, before moving to North Carolina. Natalie shared that she and her cousins remember Bobby as a sweet boy who was adored by the family, especially adored by his paternal grandmother. He was the apple of her eye, which is why she was heartbroken when she learned in the spring of 1998 that her son, John Russell Witt, and his family would be moving to Concord, North Carolina. John and Myung moved first, with Bobby remaining in Ohio with the family for most of the summer. The family drove him to North Carolina in July of 1998. Within a few weeks, his father spoke with a family in Ohio, sharing surprising news. He shared that Myung had returned to her native South Korea. Bobby was with her, and they weren't coming back to America. Bobby's grandmother was heartbroken when she learned this. The family said that before her death in 2017, she had still been hoping for answers as to whatever had happened to her grandson. And to be clear, the family had tried to find Bobby and his mom. Over the years, as social media was created, they began searching for him and for his mom on Facebook. They even hired a lawyer and private investigator to help them find clues, looking for any connection that could lead them to reconnect with Bobby. But they now knew that would never happen. And they asked the same question Detective Horn and his team had been asking. Who murdered Bobby and his mother and dumped them off Interstate 85 as if they were no better than garbage? Detective Horn and Bobby's family had a lot of questions for Bobby's father, John Russell Witt. And Witt was easy to find. In a federal prison in Kentucky, he had pleaded guilty to 6 counts of armed bank robbery in North Carolina in 1999. After Bobby was identified, Horn spoke with his father, but got very little information from him. But Horn kept connecting with Witt after the discovery that Bobby and his mother had been murdered. Following several conversations with Detective Horn, John Russell Witt confessed to murdering his wife and his 10-year-old son. This month, an Orange County, North Carolina grand jury indicted Bobby Witt's father on charges of murder and concealing the death of his son. The indictment alleges that Bobby was killed on July 29, 1998. And that date is very important. Authorities believe Bobby's mother had been murdered in May of 1998, soon after the move to Concord, North Carolina. And they believed Bobby had been killed on or around July 29th, soon after the family had driven him from Ohio to North Carolina. According to statements made by Bobby's family, and to be clear, these are statements from the family, not from the investigative team, family members maintained that John Russell Witt told his family that Myung caught him cheating on her with another woman in May of 1998. He said Myung left him and went to Hawaii to stay with her sister and would be staying there for a while. In late May, John Russell Witt told his family that he had met a new woman and they would be having an engagement party within the month. The family said they found it odd, but they also knew he had been cheating on Myung and assumed it had been going on longer than any of them could have known. Bobby was still with the family in Ohio, but would be driven to North Carolina to spend time with his father in mid-July of 1998. Bobby's family maintains that on July 29th, 1998, John Russell Witt talked to his mother, Bobby's grandmother, and told her that he had put Bobby on a plane to Hawaii to visit with his mom for 2 weeks. He then said he learned that Myung had taken Bobby and flown to South Korea and wouldn't be coming back to America. This is the story the family believed for decades. And the family says they understand the questions people have of them, but you have to understand things from their point of view. They believed Myung left John Russell Witt because he cheated on her. And they thought she had every right to do that. And they believed she had returned to South Korea and shut off all communication with the family because she had been hurt and didn't want to keep bringing up that pain for herself and for her son, that she wanted to move on. Remember, in time, they did search for Bobby and Myung, but they had no idea how to find them. Myung marrying an American soldier had not gone over well with her family, and some of Bobby's family claim Myung had been disowned when she married an American. Her parents died long ago, and her sister, who did live in Hawaii, wasn't located when the family hired private investigators to try to find any trace of Bobby or Myung. It's only in hindsight, 2 decades later, after learning Bobby and Myung never made it out of North Carolina, that they were able to piece together conversations with John Russell Witt and his actions and behavior in the weeks after it's believed that his wife and son were murdered. The morning Bobby was supposed to be getting on a plane to see his mom was the morning police say he was murdered, July 29th, 1998. And soon after, John Russell Witt committed crimes that landed him in federal prison. He went on an armed robbery spree with his then girlfriend, robbing people at ATMs. He had been on the run from the FBI and would be captured and convicted in 1999. Serving a sentence that now has him in prison until 2037. John Russell Witt's family knew he was a criminal, that he was serving his time, but their thoughts never wandered into the question of whether he had done something to Bobby and Myung. No family ever wants to believe that their own flesh and blood could commit such a callous and cold-blooded crime. But according to his confession, John Russell Witt was bewitched by his mistress, could think of nothing but her, and felt that to be with her, his family had to be out of the picture, which is why he allegedly confessed to killing Myung on May 13th, 1998, and dumping her body behind a pile of debris off that South Carolina interstate, and also confessed to killing Bobby at 8:30 a.m. on July 29th, 1998, strangling him to death in a storage facility and then dumping his body off that North Carolina interstate. The family of Bobby and Myung released a statement when they learned Witt had confessed to killing his wife and son. The statement reads, "Our hearts are broken into a million pieces. We had no idea that Bobby and Myung were no longer with us and had not been for a very long time. It came as a total shock to us and our world fell apart. We don't think we can ever forgive our brother for what he did. Bobby was the sweetest, kindest, and funniest little boy. He always had a smile on his face and a twinkle in his eye. And to think of that being snuffed out brings a chill to our hearts. Our brother told us Bobby's mother, Myung, took him back to Korea to raise him, and we believed him. Now we need to bring him and his mother home, where they belong, and bury them next to his grandmother, who adored him. We would like to thank the Orange County Sheriff's Department, and most especially Major Tim Horn, for his 20-plus years of work and never giving up hope and finding Bobby's family." Bobby's family now say the thing they miss the most about the weeks, months, and years before they got that call from Detective Horn is that the family always had hope they would eventually find Bobby and Myung someday. She and the family are now mourning them and mourning the loss of hope. After the family learned Bobby had been murdered, they did message with John Russell Witt, asking him to come clean about what he had done and why he had done it and where Myung was. He never came clean to them. He would only confess to investigators. John Russell Witt's family has vowed they will not stand by him, will make no appearance in a courtroom to defend him for what he's done. They say he doesn't deserve to see anyone in his family ever again. He's been living an easy life in a minimum security prison, and they want justice served in this case. John Russell Witt will return to North Carolina to face the charges against him in the murder of his son, Bobby. Authorities believe that Bobby's mother was also killed in Concord, North Carolina, but her remains were found in South Carolina, which means there are jurisdictional questions that have to be worked out before murder charges are filed in the case of Myung. Questions that will be answered. Charges that authorities say will come sooner rather than later. Investigator Tim Horn retired on February 1st of this year. He had delayed his retirement until he solved the mystery of the boy under the billboard. His son, as he had called him, until he was able to give the boy a name. Tim Horn dedicated 20 years of his three-decade career making sure Bobby Witt got justice. The family of Bobby and Myung raised enough money through a GoFundMe campaign for cremation of the mother and son's remains, and have been able to purchase grave markers for them. On May 18th, a memorial service was held for Myung and her son Bobby in Ohio, with family and friends remembering and honoring the lives of this mother and son who have finally been reunited, laid to rest side by side next to Bobby's beloved grandmother. The family say they found a friend in Tim Horn, that he's like a family member to them now. He talks to them just about every day. They were thankful that he called Bobby his son for two decades, thankful for his care and his dedication to Bobby. That care and dedication continued right up to the day Bobby and his mother were finally laid to rest. Horn volunteered to make the 8-hour drive from North Carolina to Ohio to deliver Bobby's remains in person, saying he had Bobby for 20 years and he was honored to take Bobby home. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. Tim Horn's dedication to the case of the boy under the billboard is moving. But as he has maintained all along, it's not a case he solved on his own. As he puts it, his team deserves all the credit. Forensic sculptor Frank Bender, his lifelike bust of the boy under the billboard, was his final case. As Bender worked the case, he was diagnosed with terminal cancer and would die in 2011. Karen Mitz is a documentary filmmaker who followed Frank Bender, filmed his work on the case of the boy under the billboard. She's continued to follow the case, and her true crime documentary, Does Anyone Know My Name, is a project that can now offer answers Frank Bender was hoping for as he worked his final case. When you see Frank Bender's bust of the boy under the billboard and a photo of Bobby Witt, you'll understand why Frank Bender is considered one of the greatest forensic sculptors of all time. You can see those images, along with photos of Bobby and his mom, and much more on this case, in the full show notes for this episode at southernmysteries.com. And I would ask, if you enjoy listening to Southern Mysteries, I hope you'll share this episode with your friends. It's how most of us do discover new shows to listen to, from our friends, from recommendations from people we know and trust. So support Southern Mysteries and share it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the social medias, so folks know they should be listening to Southern Mysteries, just like you. It would mean so much, and it's a free way to support a show that you love. And here's another way to support Southern Mysteries that won't cost you a dime. Listen to Southern Mysteries on the Radio Public app. It's free, easy to use, and helps listeners like you find and support shows like mine. When you listen to Southern Mysteries on Radio Public, everyone benefits because I get paid when you listen, and the money goes towards all the cost of researching, writing, recording, editing, and producing this show. It's free to listen, but it's not free to create Southern Mysteries. So it would mean a lot if you supported the show by listening with the Radio Public app that's free to download now on iOS or Android. Thanks for listening.